The chair calls the Education Policy Committee to order for Tuesday, March 17th, 2026. We have a quorum. So today we are going to, before we do anything, we need to do approval of the minutes. So Chair Jordan, would you, if you've had a chance to review the minutes, would you, from Wednesday, March 11th, would you please move approval of the minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair, with the technical correction that Mr. Adosh Uni's name is Adosh Uni and not Uni Adosh, I would move approval of the minutes from March 11th, 2026.
Thank you, Chair Jordan. So Chair Jordan moves approval of the minutes. All those in favor, with the technical correction, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The ayes have it, and the minutes are approved for Wednesday, March 11th, 2026. Members, today we are going to begin with a presentation and discussion on charter authorizers in schools. After our discussion, we will have time for member discussion. This will be followed by taking up actions on bills that were previously heard in the committee and previously laid over. So I would like to welcome MDE to the table, and I would ask that you would state your name for the record and proceed. And members, we do have a PowerPoint, I believe, in your packet that MDE is going to be following along. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. With me, I have my colleague, Megan Ariola, also the Department of Education. And today we are, let me just mute my computer. Today we're here to provide an overview of the Minnesota Charter Schools and our authorizers and how they're formed, the contracts, as well as our MAPE system, which is our authorizer performance evaluation system. So if we can go to the next slide, please, and we'll just go to slide number three. So we're just gonna start with the role of the authorizers and then move on to the relationship with charters, and we'll also talk about the Department of Education's role in supporting charter schools and authorizers. So the role of an authorizer is to ensure that a school it authorizes has the autonomy granted by its statute and fulfills the purpose of a charter school and is accountable to the agreed upon terms of the charter school contract in order to safeguard quality educational experiences for students and maintain public trust and confidence. Authorizer responsibilities include approving, monitoring, evaluating, renewing, and if necessary, closing charter schools when contract terms are not met. And I'll just say if there's any need for specific statutory references, when the questions come up, we can provide those as well. The next slide on authorizer responsibilities, they have the following ones: to review applications for new schools, determine whether a new school is ready to open, review applications for grade and site expansions, review applications for change in authorizers, and determine whether to approve or deny an application based on the authorizer's approved criteria. They're also responsible for negotiating and executing the performance charter contracts with its schools it authorizes, conduct ongoing monitoring, oversight, and evaluation of the school's academic, operational, and financial performance during the term of the charter contract, responsible for evaluating the academic, operational, and financial performance of the school as defined in the contract prior to the end of the contract to determine renewal, non-renewal, or termination of the contract, and to comply with all authorizer requirements in Chapter 124E. Next slide, please. So who can be a charter school authorizer in Minnesota? We've got school boards, intermediate school district boards, or an education district, a charitable organization under Section 501c3 that meets additional criteria that's defined in 124E.05, a Minnesota private college that's registered with the Office of Higher Education in Minnesota, a state college or university governed by the Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, the University of Minnesota, a nonprofit corporation subject to Chapter 317A, and that's if the charter school has operated for at least 3 years under a different authorizer and if the nonprofit corporation has existed for at least 25 years, and a single-purpose authorizer formed as a charitable, non-sectarian organization for the sole purpose of chartering and authorizing schools. And just to note, we currently have 12 authorizers. The critical aspects of authorizer oversight, there's three And they are establishing the initial performance contract with a charter school, determining if a charter school is ready to open, and deciding whether to renew a charter school contract. Statute identifies the process for an eligible organization to apply to MDE or to the commissioner for approval as an authorizer. MDE establishes the application deadline, and once the application is received, the 45 business day statutory deadline commences. The application for approval as a charter school authorizer must show the applicant's ability to implement the procedures and satisfy the criteria for chartering a school under 124E, and the commissioner must approve or disapprove that application within 45 business days of the deadline for that application period. If the commissioner does disapprove the application, the commissioner has to notify the applicant of the specific deficiencies in writing, and the applicant then has 20 business days to address the deficiencies to the commissioner's satisfaction. If deficiencies are identified, they're typically due to needed further clarification on process or procedures or needing further alignment to statutory requirements. After those 20 business days expire, the commissioner has 15 days, business days, to make a final decision to approve or disapprove the application. And then failing to address deficiencies to the commissioner's satisfaction makes an applicant ineligible to be an authorizer. A disapproved applicant under this section can resubmit an application during a future application period. Continuing on, for criteria to approve an authorizer, commissioner, in establishing the criteria consistent with statute, has to consider for the applicant their infrastructure and capacity to serve as an authorizer, application criteria and process, contracting process, ongoing oversight and evaluation processes, and renewal criteria and processes. Statute also outlines what the applicant must include in its application to the commissioner. So it has to include at least the following: how the organization carries out its mission by chartering schools, a description of the capacity of the organization to serve as an authorizer, including the positions allocated to authorizing duties, qualifications for those positions, full-time equivalencies of those positions, and the financial resources available to fund the positions. The application review, application and review process the authorizer uses to decide whether to grant charters, type of contract it arranges with the schools it charters to meet statute provisions, the process for overseeing the school, consistent with statute to ensure that the schools chartered comply with applicable law and rules and the contract itself, the criteria and process the authorizer uses to approve applications for adding grades or sites, the process for renewing or terminating a school's charter based on evidence showing the academic, organizational, and financial competency of the school, including its success in increasing student achievement and meeting the goals of the charter school agreement, and an assurance specifying that the organization is committed to serving as an authorizer until the commissioner terminates the organization's ability to authorize charter schools or the organization formally withdraws as being an authorizer. So there are two items I want to discuss here: the authorizer AAA or the AAP. So that's the approved application to authorize, or AA. This was mentioned there, the approved application that goes through the commissioner's process that was mentioned in the previous slides then becomes the approved application to authorize, and provides the performance measures for the Minnesota Authorizer Performance Evaluation System, or MAPES, which we'll discuss later on in a couple slides. This is the statutory framework under which authorizers' performance is evaluated. The approved authorizing plan, this is after receiving a final performance report under statute, an authorizer will update their plan, which then becomes this approved authorizing plan. This plan represents its commitments to the state in fulfilling its statutory responsibilities, including its commitments to students and the greater public. Updates to the plan must be submitted to MDE for review and approval, and the department expects changes made to any measure are at least as rigorous as what was currently approved in the plan or the approved application and consistent with statute, and with MAPES, the Performance Evaluation System. Statute also outlines the process for forming a charter school, particularly with the responsibilities of the authorizer. And the process normally begins as a group of parents or community members who see a need in their community. These are referred to in statute as charter school developers, but are more commonly called founders. They do the legwork to gather community input, explore programmatic and educational options, and assemble an application for submission to authorizers. And then an authorizer, after receiving an application from a developer or founder group, may charter either a licensed teacher under statute or a group of individuals that includes one or more licensed teachers to operate a school subject to the commissioner's approval of the authorizer's affidavit. Once the application is approved by an authorizer, the authorizer submits a new charter school affidavit to the commissioner for review. The affidavit process outlined in statute starts with before an operator may deciding to establish an operator school. The authorizer before this must file an affidavit with the commissioner stating its intent to charter a school. The authorizer must file the affidavit at least 14 months before July 1st of the year the new charter school plans to serve students. The affidavit must also state the terms and conditions under which the authorizer is chartering the school, including a market need and demand study. The commissioner has to approve or disapprove the affidavit within 60 business days of receiving it. If the commissioner disapproves the affidavit, the commissioner has to notify the authorizer of the deficiencies, and the authorizer then has 20 business days to address them. Commissioner must notify the authorizer of final approval or disapproval within 15 business days after receiving the response to the deficiencies in the affidavit. And then if the deficiencies aren't adequately addressed to the commissioner's satisfaction, the disapproval is final. An authorizer who fails to obtain approval is precluded from chartering the school that is subject to the affidavit. Just as a note, comment deficiencies that are found include not demonstrating appropriate need and demand for the new charter school, or an authorizer not following its approved application or approved authorizing plan that were discussed in prior slides. To authorize a charter school, we look to the charter school contract contents. To authorize a charter school, authorizer and charter board must sign a written contract. So this kind of establishes the expectations between the relationship. And this has to be established signed written contract within 45 business days of the commissioner's approval of the authorizer's affidavit. And the contract, as I mentioned, is the cornerstone of the charter school model. It articulates safeguards, the rights and responsibilities of the authorizer and the charter school, and outlines the academic, operational, and financial performance outcomes the school must meet for contract renewal. There's quite a list here of what the contents are. I'll just kind of go through these briefly. So there's just that the declaration of the charter school will carry out the primary purpose in statute and indicate how the school will report its implementation of the primary purpose to its authorizer. Declaration of the additional purpose or purposes that the school intends to carry out and indicate how the school will report implementation of those purposes. A description of the school program and specific academic and non-academic outcomes that pupils must achieve. A statement of the school's admission policies and procedures, governance, management, and administration plan, signed agreements from the board members of the charter school to comply with law, state and federal laws governing organizational, programmatic, and financial requirements applicable to that school, criteria, processes, and procedures the authorizer will use to monitor and evaluate the fiscal operational and academic performance consistent with statute, and then establishing for contract renewal the formal written performance evaluation that is a prerequisite for reviewing a charter contract, types and amounts of insurance liability coverage that the charter must obtain, a provision to indemnify and hold harmless from any suit, claim, or liability arising from a charter school operation, It must include the authorizer and its officers, agents, and employees. It must include a reference to the commissioner and department officers, agents, and employees. The terms of the contract have to include for an initial contract, or the terms of the contract for an initial contract may be up to 5 years plus a pre-operational planning period, or for a renewed contract or contract with a new authorizer after a transfer of authorizers, that may be up to 5 years if warranted by the school's academic, financial, and operational performance. The contents also have to include how the board of directors for the charter or the charter school operators will provide special instruction and services for children with a disability in compliance with special education statutes, and a description of the financial parameters within which the charter school will provide the special instruction and services. Specific conditions for contract renewal that identify performance of all students under the primary purpose and as the most important factor in determining whether to renew the contract, and any of the additional purposes and related performance obligations contained in the charter contract as additional factors in determining whether to renew the contract. The charter contract must also contain the plan for an orderly closing of the school that establishes the responsibility of the board and the authorizer, whether the closure is a termination for cause, a voluntary termination, or a non-renewal of the contract. And the plan must establish who is responsible for notifying the commissioner, school district in which the charter is located, and parents of enrolled students about the closure, providing parents of enrolled students information and assistance to enable the students to enroll in another school, transferring student records to the student's resident school district, and closing financial operations. And finally, a charter school must design its programs to meet to at least meet the outcomes adopted by the Commissioner for Public School Students, including comprehensive academic or a comprehensive achievement and civic readiness goals. And in the absence of the commissioner's requirements governing state standards and benchmarks, the schools must meet the outcomes contained in the contract with the authorizer. Statute also states that the charter contract must include criteria, processes, and procedures the authorizer will use to monitor and evaluate fiscal, operational, and academic performance. And per the per statute, the authorizer's application must include ongoing oversight and evaluation processes and renewal criteria and processes. The commissioner has had to establish under statute the Minnesota Authorizer Performance Evaluation System, or MAPES, and the commissioner has to review an authorizer's performance every 5 years. In a form and manner determined by the commissioner, and may review an authorizer's performance more frequently at the commissioner's own initiative or at the request of a charter school operator, board member, or an interested party. Commissioner, after completing the review, will transmit a report with findings to the authorizer. MDE developed MAPES to identify high-quality authorizing practices to promote excellence in authorizer practices in Minnesota. And we use a competitive application process to select an independent professional third-party evaluator for each MAPES cohort. The objectives of MAPES include setting clear expectations between authorizers and MDE regarding authorizer performance, ensuring authorizer accountability, and the fulfillment of commissioner-approved authorizer applications and authorizing plans, promoting high-quality charter schools and charter school authorizing excellence to improve all learning and achievement, and evaluating authorizer performance through a lens of continuous improvement. The charter school closure determinations are outlined in statute, and the causes for non-renewal or termination are based on the following grounds: failure to demonstrate satisfactory academic achievement for all students, including requirements for pupil performance that are contained in the contract, which we've discussed in prior slides, failure to meet generally accepted standards of fiscal management, violations of law, or other good cause shown. And if the authorizer terminates or doesn't renew a contract, the school must be dissolved according to the applicable provisions under Chapter 317A. There are rules, mostly for the authorizer, when it comes to non-renewal or termination of charter school contract, and then kind of a limited lane for the department. So the authorizer determines whether to renew a contract at the end of the term for any ground listed on the previous slide. And additionally, an authorizer may unilaterally terminate a contract during the term of that contract for any ground listed as well on the previous slide. And the process is that, like, at least 60 business days before not renewing or terminating a contract, the authorizer has to notify the board of directors of the proposed action in writing. And the notice has to state the grounds for the proposed action in reasonable detail and describe the hearing process. And then the charter school's board of directors can request in writing an informal hearing before the authorizer within 15 days after receiving the notice of non-renewal or termination. Failure by the board to make a written request for an informal hearing within that 15-day period is treated as an acquiescence to the proposed action. Upon receiving timely written request for the hearing, the authorizer then gives 10 business day notice to the charter board of the hearing date. The hearing has to be live streamed and recorded by audio recording, video recording, or a court reporter. And then the authorizer has to preserve the recording for 3 years and make it available to the public. The authorizer conducting an informal hearing before taking final action and then takes that final action to renew or not renew a contract no later than 20 days before the proposed date for terminating the contract or at the end of the contract. Statute doesn't provide a rule for MDE and non-renewal or termination of a charter contract except for one provision under Section 124E.10, specifically Subdivision 4C. Commissioner, after providing reasonable notice to the charter board and the existing authorizer, and after providing opportunity for a public hearing, can terminate the existing contract between the authorizer and the charter school board if the charter school has a history of a failure to meet people performance requirements consistent with state law, financial mismanagement, or failure to meet generally accepted standards of fiscal management, or repeated or major violations of law. In pertaining to the revocation of an authorizer, the commissioner can at any time take corrective action against an authorizer, including terminating its ability to charter a school, terminate a contract with a charter school, or other appropriate sanctions. And the reasons for this are failing to demonstrate criteria under which the commissioner approved that authorizer, violating terms of a charter contract between that authorizer and the board, and satisfactory performance as an approved authorizer, any good cause shown that gives the commissioner a legally sufficient reason to take corrective action, or failing to meet the terms of a corrective action plan by a specified date. Specific to MDE's oversight of the public education programs or funding of charter schools, this is very familiar territory for how MDE operates for any LEA. There's school finance, this is general education, transportation, student accounting, extended time revenue, PSEO as examples, nutrition programs, breakfast, lunch, free school meals, community nutrition programs, federal title programs, special education, including technical assistance, program monitoring, fiscal monitoring, dispute resolution, Compass, which we've heard in this committee around statewide system, looking at student engagement, support, and student outcomes, all within the MTSS framework. Academic standards, all districts and charters are required to put state standards into place so that students receive high-quality content and instruction. And then another entity at the department, Career and College Success, they oversee ABIB programs, concurrent enrollment, again, PSEO from a non-fiscal side, from a programmatic side, and personal learning plans. The Charter Center specifically, I mentioned a lot of other divisions, but not the Charter Center specifically, provides oversight over authorizers to ensure they implement their plans as approved. The oversight includes things like MAPES, which I discussed in prior slides, review of the authorizer's annual reports, review of their statements of income and expenditures, review of change in authorizer requests, reviewing new school affidavits, and reviewing and approving supplemental affidavits. Additionally, they review annual charter school assurances, review merger contracts, collect withdrawal and renewal notices of authorizers, and provide guidance for authorizers and charter schools through documents and via our bi-monthly charter school boot camp, and then review complaints regarding a charter school or authorizer who may have violated any statutory requirements. And with that, that concludes our overview of the charter and authorizer sector and MD's role in that space.
Thank you, Mr. Dosh. Appreciate that, and good presentation, even though I'm sorry I had to miss part of it. Members, we have very capable nonpartisan staff here. If you have any questions or other information you need, but do we have any questions or discussion for either nonpartisan or our presenters? I should have said Mr. Uni, sorry about that. Representative Chair Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just trying to get my notes back to where I was hoping someone else would have questions so I could get my notes
probably,
in order.
I probably threw you in. I said Mr. Adosh. So here we go. It's Mr.
It came
Uni.
Up earlier. I have questions. So on slide 15, it talks about, like, in the charter contract contents, I'm wondering if you can talk more about the plan for special education services and instruction and what goes into that when charter schools are making a plan for special education services. What are they required by law to provide? What kind of details do you see before that? And then I'll probably have a few follow-up questions.
Go ahead, Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, that is a good question. That's one where I think our knowledge is a little bit limited on the administrative side. We don't have our experts there traveling today, so I'm not able to answer that question. But we may have someone here or in the crowd who may be able to provide a little bit of insight into kind of the nuance of what goes into the special education component of the charter contract, if you'll entertain that.
Okay. Nonpartisan, do either of you want to weigh in on this? Ms. Para.
Chair Bennett, Chair Jordan, I'm not sure what goes into the contract. Charter schools are obligated to comply with the federal and state special education laws, and of course the funding mechanisms are different. Mr. Strom can tell you that. But as far as what goes into the charter, I don't know.
Chair Jordan, did you want Mr. Strom to weigh in on any fiscal components?
Sure. I mean, I guess if Mr. Strom is willing, otherwise I will definitely text my friend former Chair Daphne and tell him that I did stump Tim Strom today, which is always, I think he said he never did it. So, you know, it might be a fun one for me,
Mr. Strom,
to talk about.
Are you stumped, Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, yes. In terms of the second part of the question, the special education run by a charter school has to be under a special education director. And some charter schools have their own special education director, others contract for that service. But in the same way that a school district, there is a director responsible for the services. And then as we discussed last week on the funding aspects, the charter school's funding at the front end is the same as school districts for special education. And the difference is on the back end, where the charter schools don't get a cross subsidy amount, but instead bill back their unreimbursed costs to the school district in much the same way that school districts bill each other for serving each other's kids. But the front end of that formula is the same. The definitions of essential personnel are the same. And just like with school districts, the charter schools design the special education program for each child in consultation with that child's parents and form the IEP. And that's what generates the services. But in terms of MDE's role in oversight of that, I'm not familiar.
Chair Jordan?
Thank you. Do home districts, and whoever wants to tackle this, have any, well, actually, let me start over. Are charter schools required to offer special education services?
Who would like that? Mr. Ooney?
Madam Chair, Chair Jordan, yes. They are required to offer the services that their students need, including special education services.
Chair Jordan.
Thank you. And are charter schools, so charter schools are required to offer any special education services. Do charter schools have, what kind of discretion do charter schools have over students who require special education students? Do they have to admit any student with any service?
Mr. Ooney.
Madam Chair, Chair Jordan, charter schools, just like any other, like a district school, are required to accept any student.
Great. And then I have one more question, Madam
Go
Chair.
Ahead.
Thank you. And so then what consultation, when we talk about the IEP process that the a charter school is doing or another district, what consultation is done with the home district in establishing special, does the home district of a student have any say or any purview over the special education services or the IEP in the way that they would if that student was attending that school district? What is the relationship with the home district, the charter school, and the student receiving special education services?
Mr. Ooney.
Madam Chair, Chair Jordan, unfortunately, that is a bit beyond my knowledge here. Again, I'd have to defer either to nonpartisan staff or maybe one of our partners in the audience who may have a little bit more information about that relationship.
Ms. Parra?
Thank you, Chair Bennett and Chair Jordan. The resident district is not part of the IEP team that that determines what services and instruction the child will receive.
Okay. Chair Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for this. Special education is important. Children have a right to a special education. I think it's worthy of more discussion at a later date, not this year, but to talk about the relationship and making sure that students get their special education services, and also talking about, this isn't a funding committee, but the funding for those is always, I think, lingering in all of our minds. So thank you.
Any other comments, Mr. Ooney? Okay. Representative Lawrence.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. I think I just have a quick question, and going through your presentation seems like the authorizers have a lot of responsibility influence in this. My fundamental question, who qualifies as an authorizer, or who fulfills that role? What is that role fulfilled by?
Who would like to answer that one?
I'm just, Madam Chair.
Mr. Ooney.
Representative Lawrence, I'm just pulling up my notes here, which I seem to, there we go. So as we've laid out on slide five, there's a list in statute of who can be an authorizer. And again, that goes through an application process to the department. It can be a school district or an intermediate district, a charitable organization laid out, a 501c3, a private college approved by OHE, a state college or university, the University of Minnesota, nonprofit corporation subject to Chapter 317A, or a single purpose authorizer.
Okay.
Representative Lawrence, follow
yeah,
up?
Just follow up. So the same individuals that oversee could be part of the charter as well, or is there a specific break between the two?
Yeah, there have to be distinct individuals. They can't okay. be the authorizer and also be the charter school themselves.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, members. Anybody else? Oh, we're good to go. Oh, I'm sorry. All right, go ahead, Representative Gottfried.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I also had a question about authorizers. So currently there are 12 authorizers per your presentation. Do you know how many charter schools are active right now in the state?
Mr. Ooney.
Madam Chair, Representative Gottfried, the last I checked, I think I got it from our friends in nonpartisan, I think it's 169
okay.
as of middle of this month.
Representative Gottfried.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, you know, I've heard from some folks running charter schools that the number of authorizers over time has shrunk significantly from numbers that we're much higher, if not dozens higher, if not, I think at one point, and I may be inaccurate in saying this, but I think I remember them saying something like there was at one point over 100 different authorizers. But so I'm just curious, regardless, I do know that the number has shrunk down to 12, overseeing 160-some different schools. That feels like a lot for, you know, for 12 authorizers to oversee so many schools that each have distinct missions with all the responsibilities they're in. So I'm just curious, are you able to speak at all to, you know, what led to the shrinking number of authorizers within our state?
Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, Representative Godfrey, that's a good question, and frankly, one I should have asked directly of our team before they departed. That's one that we'll have to get back in terms of the historical trends. My guess is that it's varied over time as it's drawn down to the current 12 that we have, and we can also come back with the historical numbers and trends of when the authorizers went down, so you can see that, and we'll get some qualitative information on kind of what trends we were seeing on the reasons for the authorizer withdrawal. I will note that it has not occurred because of revocations by the department. I did ask that question. And the staff who's been around, I think, for 14 or 15 years, who's been the director of the Charter Center for, I think, around 10 years, has only had the experience of one authorizer revocation in the past 10 years.
And Representative Godfrey, if you'd like, Mr. Strom can expand on your question. If you'd like. Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, Representative Godfrey, I think that first number may be a bit high in the hundreds, but one thing to keep in mind is when charter schools were first authorized, it was a slightly different setup for the authorizers back in 1991 when the initial law passed. And at that time, much of the thought was perhaps school districts would be the authorizers. And so there were a number of school districts that were authorizers back then. We're down out of the list of 12 that Mr. Uni mentioned, there are only two school districts that are still authorizers, the Northfield District and the Chisago Lakes District. And between them, they have three charter schools. The number of higher education institutions has also changed over time there. Down now just to the University of St. Thomas as a higher education authorizer. And the majority are with the nonprofit organizations whose purpose is essentially charter school authorizing. Of the 170 or so charter schools, the Osprey Wilds Environmental Group authorizes about 35, Innovative Quality Schools about 30, Novation and 27, Volunteers of America 19. So the majority of the charter schools are, the vast majority are authorized by the big sort of single purpose style of authorizers for charter schools. But the hundreds number, I can give you a list in a few minutes here, I can go back and look, but that seems a little high to me as the number of charter schools has grown over time, even though, you know, many of those early ones were done by districts, but I think that list may be a slightly lower number than that.
Representative Gottfried.
That very well, thank you, Madam Chair, that very well could be. I probably misremembered the 100. So, yes, appreciate that and would love to you know, at some point maybe have a formal request of some of this information about why. Oh, you know, maybe some of the trends of the decreasing number of authorizers, because even if it wasn't hundreds, I do believe it was dozens, now down to just a dozen. So it would be interesting to learn a little bit what kind of led to the situation where it's so consolidated right now. And maybe I worry with so few authorizers that some of the oversight may, fall through the cracks, and want to make sure that we are addressing that if it is in fact an issue. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I just have a follow-up from Chair Jordan's question about special education in charter public schools. So I believe the number on average in school districts, the percent is around 15 to 17% of students receive special education services. Do you know what that number is for charter schools? Like, does it follow that same trend? And this, if I know you already said that you don't have all the people here to answer those questions, but I think that would be good information for us to have as a follow-up, just to say, like, Is it a higher percentage? Is it a lower percentage? Because I think it, especially with the funding piece, it does impact the funding piece.
Mr. Uni?
Madam Chair, Representative Green, unless my friends at Nonpartisan already have the answer at hand, which they usually do, we're happy to gather that information as soon as we can. I'll defer to them.
Thank you.
Ms. Pera looks like she's ready to say something.
Chair Bennett, Representative Green, I don't have exact numbers, but I would say there's going to be wide variation because some of those charter schools specialize in serving students that need special education services, whereas others will have very few. So I don't know. You're just going to get a pretty wide variation among charter schools in terms of the percentage of students that they have that get special ed.
Representative Green.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Thank you. That's good information. Yeah, I'm just curious because I know, so if there is a school that is specializes in special education services, like that then also impacts the home district because it takes some of those, is able to serve those students in a different way, maybe more effective way, if we're able to focus on that. And so it's just all, I think, part of the conversation and how we're serving students. So I appreciate that.
Thank you. Members, that looks like that is it. So thank you again to our presenters. Appreciate it very much. So members, next on our agenda for today is House File 3421. This bill was previously heard on March 10th. It was amended and laid over by the chair. Since that hearing, we have received the fiscal note, and there is zero anticipated costs to the state for this bill. So therefore, it's the chair's intention to bring up House File 3421 as amended, and we're going to move to a technical amendment and then move for placement on the general register. Is there any discussion before we proceed? We did already hear this bill. Okay, no discussion. So the chair brings up House File 3421 as amended. And I move an oral amendment to remove Section 2 of the bill, providing an appropriation since an appropriation is not necessary. So any questions about that oral amendment? Just taking away that section. Thank you. So all those in favor of the oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it, and the amendment is adopted. And the chair moves House File 3421 as amended to be placed on the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The ayes have it, and House File 3421 as amended is recommended to be placed on the general register. All right. So, members, now we were going to have one more bill bring forward, and I want to touch on this a little bit because I'm highly disappointed that we're not able to bring this forward, and I believe Chair Jordan is too from our discussion. House File 3487 by Representative Ray Rauer was scheduled to come up. If you remember correctly, it was previously heard in our committee. This is the anonymous threat bill, and it was laid over by Chair Jordan. And at that hearing, I offered an amendment to make the participation of schools permissible, and then I withdrew the amendment as Representative Ray Rauer agreed to work with us. And so Representative Ray Rauer, to her credit, reached out to both Representative Mueller and myself, and we worked together to come up with a great bipartisan bill that we all supported. And that DE amendment was going to come up today. I don't even quite know how to say all this because this is really disappointing and actually angering because we have a truly bipartisan bill here, and I want to be able to champion bills on both sides of the aisle, and I believe all of us support that bill. And we, I don't know how many hearings ago that was, Chair Jordan, that we heard that, but it's a number of them. When we heard the bill, it was posted. We invited additional written testimony. None was provided, including no written testimony by any of the agencies under the authority of our governor. But today we are going to pull this because now suddenly there is a request for a fiscal note because the bill calls for a report to be given by the agency. It's like three or 3 or 4 years old, something like that, that the bill asked the agency to incorporate within its budget. And Mr. Uni, I'm not shooting the messenger here, so I know he's sitting out there, but I want to say something about these fiscal notes, because so many of our bills, and in this case, one that has great bipartisan support, which we are ready to send to the General Register and get this done for our schools, because we know how necessary it is. It's death by fiscal note, and this should not be. So I just want to touch base. The Department of Education, as of January this year, they're hiring at least 40 new positions. They have an $8 million carryover from their previous budget, and we've asked that this be included within their current budget. I don't believe that's a big ask. And honestly, sometimes these fiscal notes give the appearance, and I'm not saying this is purposefully, but it sure gives the appearance of working behind the scenes at some point at this agency level to kill a bill without coming forward and saying it. And I don't want to believe that, but that's the appearance it gives. And I want to say, you know, if we can't ask the agency to absorb what would be a moderate report, well, we do this to our schools all the time. So welcome to the world of our local schools. As a legislature, we constantly send down to them, you need to do this report, you need to do this training, you need to do such and such. In the form of mandates, many are underfunded or unfunded. They don't get to send us fiscal notes back saying, you can't do this because this is going to cost us extra money. So this is something that I think the agency, I would ask them to reconsider this, because I want to champion Representative Raywar's bill, and I believe everybody here does, for this anonymous threat reporting, which would be a good thing for our schools, a good thing for Minnesota, and a great thing for our students and staff. So I'm just expressing my disappointment. I don't know, Chair Jordan, would you like to say anything?
Yes, Madam Chair. I want to thank Representative Ray Rauer for her work on this. I do know that she's been working very hard. Based off of the questions that she is peppering me and many of you with, she's really trying to work on this. I know this work is hard. I know people are trying, but this is a bill that we would like to pass. I will hear it next week. So I guess that's a, you know, in education, you get due dates. Let's have it figured out by next week.
Thank you, Chair Jordan. Members, thank you for allowing me to say that. It gets really frustrating when we have a bill that's bipartisan that we can all agree upon, and all of a sudden at the last minute, things like this come up. So I would hope that we can get this through. And Chair Jordan, thank you for agreeing to bring this up next week, because we certainly need to do that. I think we're just going to close it right here. It wasn't meant to have comments on this. I'm sorry, Representative Roach, but it's not a bill that's come forward. This is just Chair's prerogative. So, is it comments about Representative Roach?
So, what do we have a ballpark of what this fiscal note? Excuse me, Madam Chair. Do we have a ballpark of what this fiscal note would be? And, I mean, I can't imagine it's, you know, millions of dollars. And like you had said earlier, we put this on our school districts all the time. Sometimes the department just has to eat it. They work for the taxpayer. And sometimes they just need to figure it out. And, I mean, what a disservice to our school districts and our kids if they can't just figure it out and do a report. I mean, it's disappointing. We come here and school safety has been a number one priority, one a top priority here, and we have a bipartisan bill, and we're going to let a department stop this because of an administrative report. I find that, you know, very frustrating, and I think they need to figure it out.
Thank you, Representative Roach. And the fiscal note has been requested. We have no idea. So, anyway, I'm going to close it right there, just saying it's very disappointing, and I support this bill. Look forward to supporting it in the future as well, because our schools need this. So let's see if there's anything else that we need to do. I guess that's it. So members, this concludes today's agenda. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, March 18th, 2026. And with that, the committee stands adjourned.